Good evening. We're here this evening with our guest, Brian Hogg. Brian is director of jazz studies at Northern Kentucky. And I think the reason he's here tonight is I was fortunate enough to hear him in Washington Park several weeks ago when there was an event acknowledging the music that's come from King Records over the years. And Brian was on stage with Philip Paul. Brian, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I was absolutely inspired by your playing. How did you end up down there? Do you play with Philip regularly, or what was that all about that day?
Well, I've done some things through the Big Joe Duskin Foundation with Philip Paul, some things for schools. And we got to know each other because I would drive him to those events. So we played a couple times with Ricky Nye. But we had never played a gig together. I would go and hear him at the Cincinnati Hotel where he plays when I had a chance to. And we became good friends. And he liked what I brought to the table musically. So when he got this gig, he called me and he said, Brian, he said, when they asked me to do like a King Records thing and do some Tiny Bradshaw stuff, he said, I couldn't think of anybody else that I wanted to do with this than with you, and you know, which is a great honor for me. We did some Tiny Bradshaw stuff. We did some of that, you know, Walk the Bartender that I love. I love that stuff. But we played straight ahead jazz too. I mean, he's known for his prowess, I guess, in those King Records things where it's more blues-oriented and R&B-oriented. But really, he's a fine jazz player, too. He doesn't get enough credit for that.
Yeah, even at 90 or 89, I think for our listeners, we should just say, for those who may not be that familiar with Phil, we would think of him as the session drummer at King Records throughout its heyday, and the number of hits and artists of renown that this gentleman has played with is pages and pages and pages and pages of tremendous drumming that Philip did. Let's talk about your playing. As we were chatting before, I told you that I heard some things on that horn that I'd really never heard a tenor player play before, and you asked me what I was referring to, and I said, well, in particular, like the way you push the air through the horn. Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
It's a heck of a compliment. You know, there's so many great tenor players in this town that just knocked me out. I mean, when you said that, I was like, wow. But as far as like putting air through the horn, I don't want to be that guy that gets all like heavy, but the fact of the matter is that the saxophone has always been my voice or my escape or my chance to unleash the demons, as it were. You know, we all got them. We've all got, and you know, my past has been checkered with some very bad things. And so, you know, I always turn to the saxophone for that voice. So, you know, you get used to just pouring everything you got into it. You know, it's just kind of what I do. I mean, I'm considered loud. I mean, I'm not Morgan Craig loud, but I'm, you know, pretty loud or whatever. I put a lot of air through the horn. But I think that comes from when I was younger, you know, not being able to release, scream, as it were, or whatever it is. And just being able to focus the air that much and put it through the horn like that. I mean, it's been my voice for all of my career. I think that's why I like it so much.
I love the fact that you say voice, because I consider music to be a language, and I consider the musicians to be the speakers. And I feel strongly that it's the players or singers, the musicians' responsibility to get that message out. And I just wanted to tell you that I was getting the message loud and clear. You know, I think that was great communication. Let's talk about some styles of tenor playing and where you've been and where you are in terms of styles.
You know, one of the things about Cincinnati is that there's so many great tenor players that do their thing very well. You know, how do I fit into all that? I mean, my favorite tenor players in town are guys like Ray Heckman and Ron Bramlage, what I call old school. My dad was a huge Walk the Bartender fan, and so I was listening to King Curtis and Red Prasok, and, you know, he loved Boots Randolph and those kind of guys, you know, Earl Bostick, Eddie Cleanhead Vincent, all these guys are King Records guys. You know, I've been listening to this music for all of my life. I mean, they defined to me what the tenor is. And I respect Lester Young and Stan Getz, you know, and the beauty of what they bring to it. But I've always been attracted to that blow the doors down tenor. You know what I mean? And I there's really nothing like it. I mean, the biggest compliment I get, I know guys, you know, who are jazz guys are like, oh, you know, very interesting, harmonic, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's not, I don't, you know, if somebody comes up to me and even if they say, you know, I have no idea what you're doing, but I felt what you were trying to do. I don't understand any of it, but I felt it. To me, that's the best compliment I can get as a musician. I think really, and you know this as a musician, every person you're playing for, whether they or musicians or not, want to be who you are. They want to be right where you are playing, even if it's a turkey gig. They want to be sitting there doing what you're doing, you know what I mean?
Tell me about the Voyager. You've done some interesting recording with that group. Tell me how that works.
It started actually when I was touring in France, and I had a group, you know, my drummer was from Ireland, and then the rest of the group were French. We were doing a number of festivals, and I had never recorded a debut recording, but the chemistry was so good with that group that we went in the studio in Marseille and recorded 2 days. We did 11 tunes in 2 days, 10 hours, I think, and just went in there and burned it out. Two originals and the rest are my arrangements. Fortunately, we did that. Unfortunately, we did that because my bass player in that group died shortly thereafter. I think he lasted maybe 6 months after that he was dead. Massive lung cancer that he never smoked. Wow. It was one of those deals. But he wanted to name a group. He didn't want it to be, you know, the Brian Hogg Quartet, whatever. It made a lot of sense. It resonated with me. It's kind of hurt my own publicity in hindsight, but it was a gift for him.
Tell me about the audiences in France versus the audiences in America.
French audiences, it's all the stereotypes are true. They tend to be more attentive. They're in there. They're there. They'll listen. They respect the art form a lot more, I think, than audiences in America, but it doesn't make them better than Americans. The real issue is that Americans, we have so many great musicians. They do not have that in France. There are some great musicians in France, but there's only 68 million people in France. We have 330. And where I know maybe a handful of great saxophonists in all of France, I know 10 of them here that would be some of the best in France. You understand what I mean? So any day of the week in Cincinnati, Ohio, a Cincinnatian can go out and hear a world-class tenor player. You know what I mean? And that's not even, I'm not even being melodramatic. That's an absolute fact. You know, young, old, whatever. I mean, they play their butts off around here. They don't have that in France. And also, when we talk about jazz in France, it's Django jazz or gypsy jazz. And their style of, like, Dixieland, when we talk about Dixieland here, we're typically talking about 45, you know, the Dixieland resurgence, you know what I mean? Their Dixieland is Sidney Bechet. It's like 1920s. So when you play swing Dixieland there, they don't even know what that is. So are they better, worse? I don't know. I mean, sometimes I'd rather be playing for an American audience that if an American audience gets behind you, is totally different than if a French audience gets behind you.
What brought you to Cincinnati?
Rick Van Meter. Okay. In a word. He was my teacher, studied with Rick. I looked him up and came up here. Probably the most challenging years of my life were spent at CCM, personally, musically, but also the reward of meeting some of the people that I met. You know, some of these cats aren't even in music anymore, really, but I got the room with a guy named Andrew Neff, who was one of the best jazz musicians I've ever heard in my life, period. You know, he went to New York ahead of his time. You know, one of my mentors was Brad Good, one of the greatest jazz musicians alive today.
There's a reason why CCM has the reputation that it does.
It does. I mean, you know, those days are different. CCM's changed a lot. I don't know why. But those days, it was a scene. It was a hang. You know, Matt Meldon, Nick Fryer, myself, Ed Brazil, all those guys. All we did was play and talk about music. You know, I can remember the year I graduated, I asked one of the hotshot kids at CCM if they knew about a particular album that everybody should know. Never even heard of it. Didn't know, you know, half the players on it. I was like, you know, you've been studying jazz since you were 16 years old. You're 21. You have no idea about this record. You don't even know these people on it. That was so foreign to me. That's when I knew that things were changing.
Well, Brian, I got to tell you, my accolades are right on as far as I'm concerned. You're a great tenor player. It was great to hear you that day. It was great to chat with you this evening. We appreciate you coming in. You'll find a link to Brian's website at our website. That's wvxu.org. And this is Stuart Holman for Around Cincinnati. Thank you.
Thank you.